And we let Texas fade out with their little smile. With me this afternoon, I've got Charles Whittaker, who spent over 20 years in senior manufacturing management. That sounds posh, doesn't it? And now he works as an executive coach. And the last time I saw an executive coach, he was at the bus stop outside the studio. Welcome, Charles.
Thank you. Nice to meet you, John.
You've been helping people in the last few years to help them refine their identity. Is that right?
Yes, that's what I focus on nowadays. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And closer.
Okay. Yes, I work with men over 50 who have been or are in leadership roles. And as a result of the pressure, the sense of themselves changes. So I help them to rediscover that self.
Why does the pressure change?
Well, the pressure is constant. It's them that change underneath it. And it's simply a natural consequence of living under sustained pressure, of having to be quick on your feet, of constantly adapting to the world around you. So some of the pressure comes from our role in work. But then we have families. Families have expectations. Our partners, our children have expectations just as much as our employer. Or if we're self-employed, then our clients have these old expectations. So we're surrounded by a world of expectations. And so all these impact on ourselves. So we put ourselves backwards, if that makes sense, so that we're focusing on what other people need, not what we need. So for a man over 50, this is where this starts to become clearer. Because all those years, it was a natural thing to do. You look after the people around you. It's natural behaviour. But once we get beyond that sort of a 50 age, what we're surrounded is starts being flux. For example, kids may well have gone through university by now, and so there's a sense of the family dynamics are changing. Personal relationships may not be working the way that we would have liked them to or they used to. The world we work in has undoubtedly changed. So it's bringing to the fore a question about who am I beneath all this noise?
And it takes courage to actually recognise that, because normally we're so overwhelmed. New technologies come in, and what I used to call the golden wonder boys are coming up trying to take your job, and you're just seeing your position eroded.
Yeah.
And so, yes, you can reach this sort of crisis, it's not too strong a word, in the 50s. So once you've recognised it, what do you do next?
See, I don't call it a crisis, because that takes us to this idea of midlife crisis, which I totally reject.
Okay.
And because I believe that midlife crisis, this notion of the midlife crisis, does men a huge disservice.
Yeah.
And I would like men to recognise that this is an opportunity, a threshold, an opening, which they can actually actively choose to cross if they wish. So we can all make pictures of what this midlife crisis person looks like. There are all these things, they're commonplace, the idea of the midlife crisis. What I seek to do is help men to recognise that actually there's far more to life than what they've experienced so far. And there's a part of themselves, or a lot of themselves, which has got buried. And it's time now to sort of allow that to come forward.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, one of the other pressures that has come in is the change in retirement age. Not everybody has the opportunity to retire at 55 unless they work for public bodies. So these days you're working to 67/68. Is that also something that preys on people's minds?
Inevitably it plays on people's minds, because many people have not really had the opportunity to build the financial wherewithal to look forward to a retirement where they can afford to retire, actually. So these are always shaping who we are, because once upon a time, retirement age for men, I think, was 65. At the same time, for women, it was 60. But nowadays, I think it's 67, and likely to go up. If we've not thought about financial planning for the time we get to there, this is going to have a massive influence on how we approach the world and how we feel about ourselves in that.
Yeah. So that's one area. And as you say, people's family situation has changed. If they've gone through to university and that, yeah. Then perhaps the house is too big or whatever.
The house is too big, yeah, sure, yeah. And maybe it may be a time to follow pursuits which have been pushed to one side, because there simply wasn't time under the pressure of family life, business life, work life. They had to do something different. They didn't have the opportunity to do what they can do now. They always wanted to play the guitar. Well, now's the chance to play the guitar or what have you.
But we've got to get to that stage first, haven't we?
Yeah.
You know, because speaking personally, that was probably the last thing on my mind, is that I was existing day to day. And I knew when I started my work, retirement age was going to be 65. And if I got the right job, I could retire at 55. And then it was 66 for me. But I never actually started thinking about what I was going to do in retirement until about a year before I retired.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, I had... the services of an organisation that came in for a whole lot of us and said, right, you're coming up to retirement, you need to start planning. What are you going to do? If I hadn't had that, then I think I would be floating around in the mire. So how do we get the message across that there are people like you to come to that can help them escape the traps or the mire itself?
How do we get the message across is, first of all, slowly, because it's not something people necessarily are looking for actively. People are more likely to find people like me through word of mouth or through something they read somewhere. They might see me on social media, for example. Or it may be through somebody who has already worked with me and they're chatting and why don't you go and have a chat with Charles? Maybe he's the person who can get some clarity about what you want to do next.
Well, we're going to come back to that, the starting and making contact and how you go about things after we've had Rory popping in with the Tuesday Events Guide.
The West Kent Radio Events Guide.
The Dragon Boat Race returns to the Tunbridge Castle waters, promising a day of competition and community spirit. Dragon boating is a fun-filled water sports activity where teams compete in large canoe-like vessels fitted with dragon heads and tails. With all proceeds going toward local charities and good causes, you can watch this all unfold at the Big Bridge in Tunbridge on Sunday the 6th of September, starting at 9 a.m. Also in Tunbridge that weekend is the Food and Drink Festival. This will be running from the 5th to the 6th of September at the Tunbridge Racecourse, starting at 11 a.m. Kent High Wheeled Partnership is hosting a free educational day to learn about biodiversity and invasive plant species. This event, named Lose the Laurel, Bring the Beach, has four speakers from an array of organisations. This Laurel Awareness Day event acts as a way to connect with our local woodlands and the challenges they face. Make your way over to Sherwood Lake and Woodlands on Saturday, the 5th of September, starting at 11 a.m. The Speldhurst Flower, Vegetable and Craft Show 2026 is back once again. This event is open to all and has classes for everyone, from growers to bakers to brewers and more. Prep your green fingers and wheelbarrow down to Speldhurst Village Hall on Saturday, the 5th of September, starting at 2 p.m. For more information on these events, or perhaps to add your own local event, visit our website, westkentradio.co.uk.
The West Kent Radio Events Guide.
Lunch break with Arty Farty Retreat in Southborough. A safe place to express yourself.
West Kent Radio Travel.
So let's take a look at the local roads and some of the roadworks that could be slowing you down. In Tunbridge Wells, Upper Grosvenor Road is closed near the junction with Meadow Road for gas mains replacement work. This is also affecting Grosvenor Road, which is closed from St John's Road down to Upper Grosvenor Road. That work was due to finish today, but has been extended for another couple of weeks. In High Broome, Sandhurst Road remains closed between Clifton Road and Upper Grosvenor Road. Again, that was due to be finished today and that has been extended. In Tunbridge Wells, Broadwater Down is closed between the A26 Irridge Road and St Mark's Road. At Ditton, New Road is closed from the A20 London Road to Woodlands Road. And finally at Housted, Knockholt Road is closed for gas works between Housted Lane and South Dean. And that is West Kent Travel.
A bit more to add, Chris. Still long delays due to an earlier van fire on M20, bound from Junction 2, A227 Rooton, Brands Hatch Junction to Junction 1, the M25, A20, Swan Interchange. On the M25 itself, travel time is 15 minutes at Dartford Tolls. Still slow traffic on the Seven Oaks High Street. And very slow traffic. Still no, it's got better. It's no longer 10 minutes, it's 5 minutes. Here in Tunbridge Wells on the A26 London Road and St John's Road between Southborough and the centre of Tunbridge Wells. The M26 itself is reopened, also traffic is slowly easing. And that is West Kent Travel.
West Kent Radio.
Baby, it's a dream come true. Walking right alongside of you. Wish I could tell you how much I care. But I only have the nerve to stare.
Paul Carrick, when you walk in the room. Well, in the room with me is Charles Whittaker. We're talking about life's pressures, particularly as we get closer to retirement. And let's take it from there. There's a sudden realisation that, we're panicking, and so we find someone like you. How do you start with people who come to you?
Don't panic, as Corporal Sonny, I think he said in a certain TV programme.
Definitely.
First thing is to have a conversation. All I do is have a conversation. I'm well past retirement age, and I've lived a lot. I've seen a lot. I've experienced a lot, beyond various trainings I've done too. In a way, the trainings are incidental, but they do inform how I perceive things through. So it's about sort of learning what, for me to learn about you and how you see the world and what you want to achieve for yourself and what it is about you that is not yet alive, because we're very good at suppressing things because of the pressures I was talking about earlier on. That's a natural way we are. We don't have time to deal with everything. So for the man, these things get put aside. It's true for women too. I'm not saying men are unique in this, far from it. It happens to women as well. So if women are listening, I'm certainly not saying it doesn't happen to women. Oh, of course it happens to women too. So what they do is we simply have conversations. I come from my own sort of views of the world, but it's not about my views that matter. I'm wanting to help the man to discover his own views and in a way restore a sense of who he really is. He's lost sight of who he is, in my view, simply because of the pressures of life.
So lost his identity.
Lost his identity, yeah. Yeah.
And that must be... Does that realisation they've lost their identity come suddenly? Or they woke up one morning saying, who am I?
That's the thing, it doesn't happen suddenly at all, no. No. People, in my experience, have never woken up in the morning and said, who am I really? What's my identity? It doesn't happen that way. It's the kind of questions that they ask themselves about themselves, and they don't have an easy answer. They don't know what was it like when I did this, and they might have a sudden memory of something in the past, and they. There's a kind of gap between how they think about themselves now and that memory they have, and that's how they can sort of start to find a way into sort of thinking that they need to do something about where they are now.
So it's rediscovering the things that excited them in the past. In many people in business or in high pressure jobs don't have much of a social life, or the social life revolves around the work.
Exactly.
And their partner is normally not part of that social life. So rediscovering having a social life with their partner is part of the process as well. Speaking personally, I'm going to ask you to speak personally. When did you realise you had to rediscover yourself?
It's an ongoing process, actually. I think way back to when I, in my manufacturing days, I was aware that I was constantly aware of a need to reinvent myself. In those days, more in the sense of being able to keep up with the pressures, of being able to survive and to be able to make sure I perform the business the best way I could. Because manufacturing is very dynamic, and so you have to be on the ball all the time to make sure the business goes forward. So that was when it started, but it was just it's been a series of things since then. Some of the training I've done has brought me face to face with thinking about it. in the nature of my, I was married and that marriage broke up. So that brings you face to face with a certain reality about what you're losing, because you lose family, lose grandchildren, and you lose the social circle. And so these things bring you face to face with a new way of perceiving yourself and perceiving the world around you, for me.
It sounds very similar to people who go through bereavement. They've lost something and they're going to have a face up to the future.
There are very strong parallels with bereavement in there, John. Yes, there's a lot of grief. Yeah. In that process of what worked and then doesn't work, of losing, for me, especially the grandchildren, and the social circle. Yeah, there's a lot of grief about losing all of that.
Because you're no longer part of that. I know somebody was saying the other day to me that she and her husband used to go out as a couple. And then he died, and suddenly she finds she's not being invited to things.
Yes.
That social circle has gone.
Yes.
And of course, there's the other extreme, which is I sometimes got invited to things where they're trying to pair me off with somebody else.
Yes.
And I wasn't ready for that. So, there are lots of parallels. Was there anybody there to help you?
No.
So this was...
Yes and no. In a very personal way, no. It was worked out for myself. In a practical day-to-day, when my marriage broke up, I was very firmly told that the property was owned by my ex. So I had no say in that from my perspective. And so it's a question of where do I go and live? And my mother was still alive, and she rather reluctantly said, "Okay, you can come and live with me." It was a big change. So in ways she was supportive, and in a ways it was a big disruption to her life. As it turned out, it was perhaps for the best. She was elderly, and so I was able to actually, as it turned out, I was able to support her for the last 2 years of her life in a way which I'd not expected and she'd not expected. So it did turn out, but not in a way that either of us would never have expected or even wished for. It was a very instructive period, actually. Caring for an elderly mother is... it's demanding and
challenging.
Challenging. You learn a lot about yourself in the process.
Yes.
And I would not have missed it for the world. Tough though it was, I would not have missed that for the world.
Because that experience again gives you the opportunity to share.
Yes.
What other people may go through.
Yeah.
The old phrase is expect the unexpected. And quite often the unexpected is not what we were expecting.
By definition, yes.
Yeah, by definition. Yeah. When we come back, we're going to talk about how you came to write your first book and what it's about.
Okay.
You're listening to West Kent Radio Lunch Break with me, John Butt, and my guest, Charles Whittaker. And Charles has been talking very personally about his experience, about, if we can dare say, getting older, facing changes and being totally unprepared for them. And he's here to help others be a little bit more prepared. And he's written, I think, three books now, is it?
Three books. Yes.
The first one, The Inner Life of Leadership Pressure. Right, okay, that's a long title.
It's a rather grand title, isn't it?
Yeah. What prompted you to write it?
Chance.
Okay.
I had no intention of writing a book. It came into what was a vacuum. I had been reading a book about burnout because I was curious about burnout. I'd read a very good book about burnout and lots of useful information, but it didn't answer the question I wanted to get answered. Then I was reading another book with no thought about the question of burnout. I was just reading a book. But it was a book which introduced me to something called the basic rest activity cycle, otherwise known as the ultradian rhythm, which is a fancy term for a cycle that we go through every 120 minutes. And it's a cycle, simply it goes up and down. It's like hills and valleys continuously throughout the day and night. And what the research had shown was that for this thing which lasts 120 minutes, ideally, and I've emphasised the ideal bit because we'll come back to that in a moment, we take a break from what we've been doing. Because at that 90 to 100 minute point, our brain needs a break. And memory consolidates at that point, if we allow it to, and our creativity returns, but we have to allow it. But typically, what do? We push through. We go to another meeting. But this is a biological cycle, well proven scientifically, and we ignore it. We just carry on going. And in carry on going, we're pushing more and more pressure on ourselves. And so we never get a chance. That 20 minutes at the end of the, after say, it's, all this is approximate, but after 100 minutes we say 10 minutes to recover. That is incredibly valuable because we're much more effective after that 20 minutes recovery time, but we don't do it. So our performance drops. So that was one thing I read. And so I started sort of, that got me going. That's what eventually that did lead to the book. But by itself, that's only a small part. And then, so that book I read had actually come across in lockdown all those years ago. It was 5 years later, actually, I'd bought the book and not read it. So one day I started to read it. And then another book I'd bought in lockdown by a neuroscientist called Lisa Feldman-Barrett, who talks about how emotions are made. And I started thinking, well, how does this thing of this natural pause every 100 or so minutes relate to what she was talking about? And she talks about that the brain is a prediction machine. So our brain is constantly predicting in real time what to do next. And it takes all our assembled information from across the years and what our body is telling us right now in the moment. So it predicts in real time what we should be doing. What happens then is that because of the, we don't take these 20 minute breaks, ideally, which are ideal. So the brain starts to address this in its prediction cycle. And so when it predicts continuing load, when it predicts continuing load, it narrows our ability to deal with things. It limits our ability to deal with things. We get faster, which might sound good, but that process of getting faster means we can become shorter, more inclined to anger, all that kind of thing. So whilst it may seem ideal to be talking about taking a 10, 15, 20 minute break every 100 minutes, it pays dividends. And I've been experimenting with it myself. I'm not sort of preaching from a high place in this. I've tested all the things that are in this book. I've tested them with real people. And they've withstood the test of what I've been writing about. Meeting real people has reinforced to me the value of what I've actually managed to put together in the book. So this thing of not taking these breaks. And if we can imagine a window, we see clearly through a window, there's nothing obstructing the view, we get a great perspective on what's happening out there. And in that way, we can think clearly, we can see clearly. But things get in the way of seeing clearly out of that window. And half-finished conversations come to mind, or the email we forgot to send, or the job that we've been putting off. All these things start to clutter that view from that what was a clear window, and these are what I call in the open loops, and it comes from research from a guy called David Allen, open loops. So three kinds of open, or three things we can do with open loops. There might be short-term things like the unanswered email I mentioned, or a conversation which we didn't quite finish. We can often do those quickly and clear those away. There might be things which aren't really out, which we allow ourselves to hold, which aren't really ours to hold anyway. If we're good at people pleasing, we hold on to these things, and we make it ours. So the best thing to do with those is delegate it, give it to somebody else, with permission, of course. That releases further thinking time. And the other one is things which are ongoing. We can't deal with them quickly. We can't delegate them or ask somebody else to deal with them. So what do we do with those? We have to contain them, because the mind does not like things which are uncontained. So we contain it by writing it down and giving it a home. When will I deal with this? Do I need anybody to help with it? What are the consequences of delaying it? Just thinking through what can be done about that and making a note of it. Once we then, and we put it in the diary, so we can release that from all this thing that's cluttering our mind, so that what was an open loop is closed. So that ability to open that window up again is there again. So the brain is now predicting, we've got an open window, because we've got this wide open view. The brain can release the body budget to be able to deal with all the things that happen to it.
That's great. Now, we could continue all afternoon, but we're running rapidly out of time. So this book, is it available in the shops, or do you go to Amazon or on Kindle?
It's available on Amazon.
Right.
And it's available as a hardback, as a paperback, as a Kindle version, and it's also available as an audio version, which is not on Amazon. It's available through Apple, I believe.
Okay. Well, I'll put all that information on our website.
Okay.
It should be there on Thursday. Thank you very much for coming in, Charles, and we'll hopefully come in again sometime.
Thank you very much.
And we'll continue the conversation and perhaps look at the next book as well and what that implies.
Okay, that'd be nice. Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk to people, John.
Thank you very much.